Chapter 11. The Greatness of St. Zivilcix. Goliath Corporation implements Distraction Reduction Program. Article in The Toad on Sunday, July 3, 1988. Accusations were growing yesterday that the corporation's drive to increase productivity would result in the loss of civil liberties. This was strongly denied by Goliath, who commented, "We don't see bricking up the million or so windows in our 10,000 work facilities as anything less than a positive step forward. By removing windows, we aim to help the worker who might be suffering from interest in work deficit disorder to higher levels of self-help and greater productivity. We also think that it will save thousands of gallons of Windex and the estimated 600 deaths suffered by window cleaners every year." Accusations that the corporation was nothing short of a bunch of bullies were met with a 300-page writ for defamation, delivered personally by very big men with tattoos. From humble beginnings in 1289 to a fiery end in the autumn of 1536, the towering beauty of the great cathedral of Swindon was once the equal of Canterbury or York, but no longer. Built over at least four times since then, the site of the cathedral was now occupied by a temple of another kind, Tesco's, where monks once moved silently to prayer beneath vaulted cloisters. You can now buy Lola Vavoom workout videos, and where the exquisite stained glass east window once brought forth tears from the coldest heart, there is now a refrigerated display boasting five different types of smoked sausage. I took my seat and placed Friday on my lap, and he wriggled while I looked around. The car park was full of eager spectators. Some, like myself, were sitting on the especially constructed tiered seating, the rest standing behind barriers on the asphalt. But everyone, sitting or standing, was facing a small, fenced-off area sandwiched between the shopping trolley return point and the ATM machines. This small area contained a weathered arched doorway, the only visible remnant of Swindon's once great monastic settlement. "How are you doing?" asked Joffy, who, as well as being a minister for the GSD and several other small denominations, was also head of the Idolatry Friends of St. Zivilcix. "Fine. Isn't that Lydia Startright?" I was pointing at a well-dressed female reporter, readying herself for a broadcast. "She's about to interview me. How do I look?" "Very ecclesiastical." "Good. Excuse me." He straightened his dog collar and walked over to join Lydia. She was standing next to her producer, a small and curiously unappealing man who was so unoriginal of thought that he still considered it cool and desirable for people in the media to wear black. "What time is old Zivilcix due to appear?" the producer asked Joffy.
"In about 5 minutes."
"Good. Lids, we better go live." Lydia composed herself, took one more look at her notes, awaited the count-in of the producer, gave a welcoming smile, and began. "Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Lydia Startright for Toad News Network, reporting live from Swindon. In under 5 minutes, St. Zivilcix, the obscure and sometimes controversial 13th century saint, is due to be resurrected here, live on regional TV." She turned to indicate the weathered pieces of stone previously ignored by thousands of shoppers, but now the center of attention. "On this spot once stood the towering cathedral of Swindon, founded by St. Zivilcix in the 13th century. Where the wet fish counter now stands was where Zivilcix penned his Book of Revealments, containing seven sets of prophecies, five of which have already come true. To help us through the quagmire of claims and counterclaims, I have with me the very irreverent Joffy Next, head of the Church of the Global Standard Deity here in Swindon, speaker at the Idolatry Friends of St. Zivilcix, and something of an expert in things Zivilcixian. Hello, Joffy. Welcome to the show."
"Thank you, Lydia," said Joffy. "We're all big fans of yours at the GSD."
"Thank you. So, tell me, what exactly are the revealments?"
"Well," he began,
Details are understandably vague, but St. Sifalkix wrote a number of predictions in a small book before he vanished in a cleansing fire in 1292. An incomplete copy of the revealments is in the Swindon City Library. But unlike the work of most of the other seers, who make vague and sweeping generalizations that are open to interpretation, St. Sifalkix's predictions are refreshingly specific. Perhaps you could give us an example. Of course. Part of Sifalkix's revealment the first tells us that a lowly butcher's son from the town of Ipswich will rise to be Lord Chancellor. His name shall be Tommy Wolsey, and he will be inaugurated the day before Christmas, and shall get only one present, not two, as should be his right. That's uncannily accurate, breathed Lydia. Indeed, existing letters from Cardinal Wolsey indicate most strongly that he was vexed and annoyed at having to make do with only one present, something which he often spoke about and might have contributed, many years later, to his failure to persuade the Pope to grant Henry VIII an annulment of his marriage to Catherine of Aragon. Remarkable, said Lydia. What else? Well, continued Joffy, Sifalkix's revealment the second told us that it shall be known as the Sail of the Century. An armada of over 100 ships smelling of paella shall cross the channel. Fire and wind will conspire to destroy them. England shall remain free. Not quite so good, said Lydia. I agree, replied Joffy. Paella wasn't invented until after the Spanish Armada. There are the odd mistakes, but even so, his accuracy is astonishing. Not only do his revealments include names and dates, but also, on one occasion, a reliable phone number for a good time in Leeds. By the end of the 16th century, St. Sifalkix had been afforded the rare hallmark of unbridled Elizabethan success, the commemorative plate. By the time of his next revealment, a century and a half later, his supporters and followers had dwindled to only a handful. But when it arrived, his revealment the third catapulted Sifalkix back into the world's headlines. In 1776, a George King numbered three will lose his mind, his largest colony, and his socks. The colony would grow to be the greatest power in the world, but his mind and his socks will stay lost. And the fourth? The man named after a form of waterproof shoe shall trounce a short Frenchman in Belgium. Clearly Waterloo. And the fifth? The evil yet nattily dressed aggressors known as Nazis, whose fear has polarized the nation, will be ejected from these islands by, and I know this sounds really weird, the colony that was mentioned in Prediction 3. And Dennis Compton will score 3,816 runs for Middlesex in a single season. Uncanny, murmured Lydia. How would a 13th century monk know that Compton batted for Middlesex? He was, and indeed might be again, the greatest of seers, replied Joffy. We know that his revealment the sixth was the prediction of his own second coming, but it is the sports fans of Swindon who will really be bowled over by his revealment the seventh. Exactly so, replied Joffy. According to the incomplete Codex Sifalkixus, it shall be... There will be a home win on the playing fields of Swindon in 1988, and in consequence of... There is more, but it's been lost. We can ask him about it when he reappears. Fascinating stuff, Irev next. Just one question. Where is he? I looked at my watch as Friday stood on my lap and stared that unnerving sort of two-year-old stare at the couple behind us. St. Sifalkix was already 3 minutes late, and I saw Joffy bite his lip nervously. They had made much of the great man's predictions, and for him not to turn up would be just plain embarrassing, not to mention costly. Joffy had spent a great deal of Mum's savings learning Old English at the local adult education centre. "Tell me, Erev, next," continued Lydia, trying to pad out the interview. I understand that the Toast Marketing Board has secured a sponsorship deal with St. Sifalkix. Indeed, replied Joffy. We at the Idolatry Friends of St. Sifalkix have secured on his behalf a very favourable deal with Toast, who wanted to have exclusive rights to his likeness and wisdom, if he has any. Nevertheless, I understand that the Goliath Corporation was also said to be interested.
Not really. Goliath has been less than enthusiastic since their sportswear division paid over £250,000 for an exclusive sponsorship deal with St. Bernadette of Lincoln. But since her return 6 months ago, she has done nothing except brick herself up in a room and pray in silent retrospection, something that doesn't lend itself to selling running shoes. The Toast Marketing Board, on the other hand, made no such demands. They are happy just to see what Zivilcix himself would like to do for them.
Lydia turned back to the camera. Astonishing. If you've just joined us, I'm speaking from the live telecast of the second coming of the 13th century saint, Thomas Zivilcix. I looked at my watch again. Zivilcix was now 5 minutes late. Lydia carried on her live broadcast, interviewing several other people to soak up time. The crowd grew slightly impatient, and a low murmuring started to arise from the expectant silence. Lydia had just asked a style guru about the sort of clothes they might be expecting Zivilcix to be wearing when she was interrupted by a shout. Something was happening just outside Tesco's between the child's coin-in-the-slot flying elephant ride and the letterbox. Joffy vaulted over the press enclosure and ran towards where a column of smoke was rising from a crack that had opened up in the mother and child parking area. The sky grew dark, birds stopped singing, and shoppers coming out of the revolving doors stared in astonishment as a bolt of lightning struck the weathered stone arch and split it asunder. There was a collective cry of alarm as a wind sprang up from nowhere. Pennants advertising new Savor product lines that were hanging limply on the flagpoles opened with a crack, and a whirling mass of dust and waste paper spread across the car park, making several people cough. Within a few moments, it was all over. Sitting on the ground, and dressed in a rough habit tied with a rope at the waist, was a grubby man with a scraggy beard and exceptionally bad teeth. He blinked and looked curiously around at his new surroundings.
"Welcome," said Joffy, the first on the scene. "I represent the idolatry Friends of St. Zivilcix and offer you protection and guidance."
The 13th century monk looked at Joffy with his dark eyes, then at the crowds who had gathered closer to him, all of them talking and pointing and asking him if they could have their pictures taken with him.
"Your accent is not bad," replied St. Zivilcix slowly. "Is this 1988?
"It is, sir. I have brokered a sponsorship deal for you with the Toast Marketing Board."
"Cash?"
Joffy nodded.
"Thank bleep for that," said Zivilcix. "Has the ale improved since I've been away?"
"Not much, but the choice is better."
"Can't wait. Haba, haba. Who's the moppet in the tight blouse?"
"Mr. Next," interjected Lydia, who had managed to push her way to the front. "Perhaps you would be good enough to tell us what Mr. Zivilcix is saying."
I welcomed him to the 20th century, and said we had much to learn from him as regards beekeeping and the lost art of brewing mead. He, said just then that he is tired after his journey and wants only world peace, bridges between nations, and a good home for orphans, kittens and puppies.
The crowd suddenly parted to make way for the mayor of Swindon. St. Zivilcix knew power when he saw it, and smiled a greeting to Lord Volescamper, who walked briskly up and shook the monk's grimy hand.
"Look here. Welcome to the 20th century, old salt," said Volescamper, wiping his hand on his handkerchief. "How are you finding it?"
"Welcome to our age," translated Joffy. "How are you enjoying your stay?"
"Cushy, me old cocker babe," replied the saint simply.
"He says, 'Very well, thank you.'"
"Tell the worthy saint that we have a welcome pack awaiting him in the presidential suite at the Finnis Hotel.
Knowing his aversion to comfort, we took the liberty of removing all carpets, drapes, sheets, and towels, and replaced the bedclothes with hemp sacks stuffed with rocks.
"What did the old fart say?"
"You don't want to know."
"What about the incomplete seventh revealment?" asked Lydia. "Can St. Zivilkix tell us anything about that?" Joffy swiftly translated, and St. Zivilkix rummaged in the folds of his blanket and produced a small leather-bound book. The crowd fell silent as he licked a grubby finger, turned to the requisite page, and read,
"There will be a home win on the playing fields of Swindon in 1988, and in consequence of this, and only in consequence of this, a great tyrant and the company named Goliath will fall."
All eyes switched to Joffy, who translated. There was a sharp intake of breath and a clamour of questions.
"Mr. Zivilkix,"
said a reporter from the Mole, who up until that moment had been bored out of his skull,
"do you mean to say that Goliath will be lost if Swindon wins the Superhoop?"
"That is exactly what he says," replied Joffy. There was a further clamour of questions from the assembled journalists as I carefully tried to figure out the repercussions for this new piece of intelligence. Dad had said that a Superhoop win for Swindon would avert an Armageddon, and if what Zivilkix was saying came true, a triumph on Saturday would do precisely this. The question was, how? There was no connection as far as I could see. I was still trying to think how a croquet final could unseat a near dictator and destroy one of the most powerful multinationals on the planet, when Lord Volescamper intervened and silenced the noisy crowd of newsmen with a wave of his hand.
"Mr. Next, thank the gracious saint for his words. There is time enough to muse on his revealment, but right now I would like him to meet members of the Swindon Chamber of Commerce, which, I might add, is sponsored by St. Bidulph's Hundreds and Thousands, the cake decoration of choice, and that we might take some tea and carrot cake. Would he be agreeable to that?"
Joffy translated every word, and Zivilkix smiled happily.
"Look here, St. Zivilkix," said Volescamper, as they walked towards the marquee for tea and scones. "What was the 13th century like?"
"The mayor wants to know what the 13th century was like, and no lip, sunshine."
"Filthy, damp, disease-ridden, and pestilential."
"He said it was like London, Your Grace."
St. Zivilkix looked at the weathered arch, the only visible evidence of his once great cathedral, and asked,
"What happened to my cathedral?"
"Burned during the dissolution of the monasteries."
"Hot damn," he muttered, eyebrows raised. "Should have seen that coming."
"Duis outer dolo in fugiat nulla parior,"
murmured Friday, pointing at St. Zivilkix's retreating form, rapidly vanishing in a crowd of well-wishers and newsmen. "I have no idea, sweetheart, but I've a feeling things are just beginning to get interesting."
"Well," said Lydia to the camera, "a revealment that could spell potential disaster for the Goliath Corporation, and—"
Her producer was gesticulating wildly for her not to connect Tyrant with Kane live on air.
"An as-yet unnamed tyrant. This is Lydia Startride, bringing you a miraculous event live for Toad News. And now a word from our sponsors, Goliath Pharmaceuticals, the makers of Hemorrelief."